Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, I'm Kevin Cruz. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we're helping you to become the boss everyone wants to work for and nobody ever wants to leave. Now, our guest today, he's an HR visionary. He's an author. He's the force behind the Work Human Movement. And he has long believed that recognition and positive reinforcement unleashes discretionary energy in employees, inspiring them, of course, to do their best work. He's the author of The Crowdsourced Performance Review, co-author of the book, The Power of Thanks. He is the CEO and co-founder of Globoforce, Eric Mosley. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hi, great to be here.
Great to talk with you. And I've been really excited because you're doing some new and innovative work. We've talked about your work in the past with recognition and some of your books. But you did something interesting. You know, I'm the old school guy who came out of the employee engagement movement of the 90s, 2000, worked at Conexa and all that, wrote a book called Employee Engagement 2.0. Yeah. You've done something sort of new here. You teamed up with IBM, and we use IBM Watson, our software, big IBM fan. Yeah. And you came up with a new index you're calling the Employee Experience Index and did a study around it. And first, I'm just curious, you know, how did the partnership with IBM come about?
We've worked closely with IBM over the years. We have a lot of common customers, as you might imagine. Globoforce is a company we deal with, some of the world's largest kind of Fortune 500 companies in hundreds of countries around the world. And IBM operate at that level too. So we work very closely with them for some of our customers. So we know the folks in this area of IBM. And when we sat down on this path to look at the employee experience and what is, you know, a new set of employee perceptions for how they view their relationship with their employer, it seemed like a no-brainer to work with IBM because they were also exploring these areas and they were trying to bring Watson to bear on these big issues. And the scale of IBM and Globoforce together meant that we were able to run these surveys to, you know, 22,000 employees across over 40 countries. So really operate that index, get data at real scale, and then leverage our technologies and IBM Watson then to kind of analyze and look through the results. So they were a fantastic partner for an exercise such as this.
And tell me a little bit more about why create a new index? Like, where did you feel that employee engagement was falling short or not serving us well? I mean, what were your thoughts on that? Why did we need something new?
Well, I think the world of HR is evolving in terms of it always has and it always will. And the concept of employee experience or engagement or energy or satisfaction or any of these concepts kind of evolve as culture evolves in the world. And what we're seeing over the last kind of 10 and 20 years is a move away from this command and control type management influence to something that's much more crowdsourced, much more social, much more from the people. So as culture has changed in terms of the advent of, you know, social networks and how we live our lives, how that pertains in the workplace has meant that employer-provided engagement is kind of an outdated kind of concept and something that took the voice of the employee and the reality of today's more social culture was needed. So looking at things like organizational trust, empowering the employee, talking about issues around things like meaningful work, which brings in some topics from the burgeoning movement around happiness, which is, you know, generally quite new, you know, the concept of what makes a human being happy. So taking concepts like that, bringing it in, all touches on how an employee feels about their relationship with their employer. So it's a next generation and it will continue to evolve and something else will replace this as culture evolves and people. So it seemed like the next step to broaden it and bring those more modern cultural attributes to bear.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm, you know, looking at your paper off to the side here and, you know, employee experience, you guys have broken it into belonging, purpose, achievement, happiness, and vigor.
Yeah.
And so you created items to measure that, right? And then also looked at, do those count when it comes to the hard business metrics? Tell us a little bit about the study.
Well, a study, obviously, as we said, at great scale. So people all over the world. And that was one of the most fascinating aspects of it, was to look at how the results compared from region to region in the world, from country to country in the world. And then delving down into those kind of fundamental elements of the results, like what is most important. When I think about how a leader or a manager will take this kind of data and change how they work or take it on board, they really need to understand that what they're dealing with when you're leading a team is you're dealing with a group of human beings. And when you put a lot of these things to the side, you realize that human beings have some core needs, and those core hierarchy of needs, you know, fundamental to them is the relationships between employees, including the relationship with the manager, and then also kind of positive reinforcement for the good work that they do. And it's only when those things happen that you can be who you want to be, who you aspire to be, which is kind of self-actualization. And that links to meaningful work, because meaningful work came out as the number one kind of, you know, criteria. So when a single manager looks at a lot of these results, what they have to do is take a step back and think, well, I'm dealing with a human being here, and each human being has these core needs for connection between themselves and, you know, their own family outside of work, their colleagues inside of work. And they need to feel that what they do matters. And that's on two axes. One axis is their individual contribution matters. So in other words, somebody provides appreciation and positive reinforcement for the work that they do. And on the other axis, that the work that they do collectively with those people that they're, you know, friends and colleagues with, that that matters in the world as well. And so the experience index shows that those elements are kind of an outgrowth from the core human needs that we all have.
And, you know, as again, someone who's kind of been deep into this for a long time, you know, I immediately went to look at, okay, so you've got these interesting metrics, but do they matter? You know, do they actually correlate to something? And they do. I mean, back in the engagement stuff, people want to know, do these engagement scores, you know, link to discretionary effort? Are we getting discretionary effort out of the workforce? And is it reducing turnover? I mean, there's all these other measures you could look at, safety, quality, et cetera. But those are the really the big two, turnover and discretionary effort.
Yeah.
And your research shows that the experience index does matter on these metrics.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the number one thing is, you know, in terms of output, so performance. So I always, when I talk to managers about these things, I try and say, look, just, you know, try and remember that you're dealing with a human being. Like, because you can get lost. You can get lost in the verbiage around this stuff. And when you're sitting across from a person, from somebody that you're, you know, you're locked in a room with for most of your life, you know, your colleagues,
right,
you can dampen down their creativity, their initiative, by taking away some of their fundamental human needs. So if they have no relationships with anybody in work, if they have no colleagues, if they feel that they're not connected to another human being, well, that's a fundamental human need. And they're operating then from a deficit. If they express work, if they perform at a certain level, and nobody says, that was great, that was a great job, that was great work, or what you did was valuable, again, you're suppressing a core human need, and they're almost operating at a deficit. And until that deficit is met, until they have closure on the work that they do, on the performance that they do, they're not going to be inclined to want to do it again. So once you satisfy those core human needs, like there's a lattice of relationships in the organization where people have touchstones for, you know, people relationships that they have. And once when they do good work, they get some sort of positive reinforcement. Now you're lifting a millstone from their shoulders. You're taking a weight off them. That deficit is gone. And what's left is they can just express themselves. So they can become more creative. Their energy will naturally flow. When you hold back on somebody receiving some of their core human needs, you're basically shackling their energy. You're putting a tax on their energy. A tax on their brain power is now being diverted to, well, you know, what is the point? You know, cynicism, a toxic influence. So once you kind of meet those core human needs, people become more expressive. They become more creative. They just have more brain power to concentrate on those things. And when they do that, they feel like they're getting closer to that self-actualization. And as they move towards that, they're not thinking about the grass is greener on the other side. They're not thinking about, you know, should I be working in a different organization? because they're happy and they're concentrated and they're expressing themselves and they don't have that deficit. So you get more performance and you get more retention. And so all managers, all leaders should always think about how can I meet them in those regards, make sure that whatever we do, whether it's implementing software or having new HR policies or processes, it should be to energize employees, but also to build relationships between employees. Very few companies have an agenda, like an official agenda, to do things that will deepen the relationships between their employees, between colleagues. Yet it is one of the top things that makes people stay and also has that dividend of them working harder. So they should, you know, organizations should think about how can I have processes, or if I'm going to implement new software, if I'm going to, you know, change procedures, can I bring an element of strengthening relationships between employees? And can I make sure that that results in the positive feedback? You know, one of the kind of dirty little tricks of deepening relationships between employees is that you de facto delegate some of that positive reinforcement to the peers. Mm. So, you know, a single manager who has a team of 8 people, for example, in a modern knowledge economy, he won't have visibility on all the work those 8 people do. He or she is probably stressed out, you know, probably trying hard to do all the things they're meant to do, but, you know, not quite getting there like the rest of us. So by delegating the meeting of those core human needs to those 8 people themselves, between the 8 of them, they can provide context for each other. They can provide positive reinforcement. They can see and notice and call attention to all the work that the 8 people do, because in aggregate, they're all going to see everything.
Yeah.
And so you're really just leveraging the people, you know, and that's where that kind of social crowdsourcing of management comes in. So you just need to meet those needs.
You mentioned early on some regional differences. I mean, are there certain countries or regions that, you know, have unusually low numbers on the employee experience index? Are there certain regions that seem to be doing it better?
I would say yes, in general. There are some that are higher on the curve and some that are lower on the curve. If you look at a region like Europe, for example, on an average, it has a pretty decent level. But within a place like Europe, you have some countries that are excelling in this area. So probably the Nordics, you know, Scandinavian type countries, maybe including the likes of Switzerland, for example, they tend to have higher employee experience. If you look at from outside of work, they generally score higher as well on things like world happiness index.
Right.
You know, so there's a clue there. They tend to be more satisfied. Maybe then, therefore, they're happier. They can express themselves more in work and they feel like they're, you know, building deeper friendships and all that good stuff. And then on the other end of the scale, in a place like Europe, you have countries like, you know, Hungary, Russia, the Czech Republic, some of those Eastern Bloc type countries. And there's no doubt they score lower on an employee index, experience index. And again, you would probably see an analog for that in happiness as well. So I think these things are all inextricably linked. And that does play out then in the results of the employee experience index. You can kind of match it to freedom of thought, freedom of expression, more social, more crowdsourced kind of themes in the countries and in the companies. And where there's more of that, you get more happiness, you get more engagement, more energy, you know, more creativity. And when there's a lot less of that, you get unhappiness, you get isolationism and disengagement, and then less of all of the good things.
Right. Now, just I want to shift just to some, you know, industry stuff. I have found it to be an interesting year where it seems like all of a sudden, again, human capital management companies are hot and they're either raising money at high valuations or they're getting acquired. LinkedIn just acquired Glint as an example. Yeah. Surprised some people. And I'm encouraged by that. It's one sign of value. So I think people are seeing that we are entering a new modern workforce, a new age of work. I think TD Magazine just came out and they're talking about it as the fourth industrial revolution, this blend of social and technology, everything moving so fast. Yeah. And so I think that's good overall for the industry. And I know, I mean, you've been at this for a long time. I mean, what are you seeing for Global Force and the larger human capital management space in the years ahead? I mean, what are the hot themes and what should we be expecting?
Yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time. And to build on maybe, you know, some of the themes I mentioned earlier in terms of the word social and crowdsourcing, things like that, are changing how we think about management practices. So, for example, the advent of a element of crowdsourced pay, for example, where leaders will look at their total rewards mix and try and rebalance to create a element of crowdsourced pay, not just manager to subordinate or company to subordinate transfer of value, but now the people transferring value to each other. That's a phenomenon we're hearing more and more in HR leader type circles, because you can carve out a very small amount of the total rewards mix, you know, like 1%, one penny out of every dollar, and give it to the people and say to the people, give it to each other. Whenever you see great work, give it to each other. That has a minimal effect on the other elements of the total rewards stack, but it has a dramatic effect on the morale, the empowerment of the workforce. So for example, you know, you might have, you start to look at if it's 100%, like a dollar, you might see that, you know, 1% goes to crowdsourced pay or recognition type programs with points, that sort of micro bonuses. You might have 60 cents going to base pay and 20% going to bonuses and 9% going to, you know, certain benefits or whatever. And if you were to take one extra penny off each of those layers and put it into the crowdsourced element, you now have 3 cents given to the people. Now you have 59 instead of 60. So you've made virtually zero impact on the other buckets.
Right.
You know, going from 60 to 59 is meaningless.
They're not going to miss it.
But you have trebled the amount of transfer of goodwill that's backed by value, this crowdsourced micropayments for the people. And you've given them so many more transactions, so many more votes on who's doing the best work and where that value should go. So that's a huge topic I think is emerging. I would say there's another two big topics I see emerging. One is moving towards team-based everything. So starting to think of management in terms of teams, starting to think of engagement in terms of themes rather than even individuals, starting to think of how do everything we do, we need to redo from a team perspective rather than an individual perspective. I hear that mantra all the time, and I think that's quite exciting because I think, you know, that also will strengthen relationships between people because they'll be working in ad hoc teams that break apart and form and they're part of other teams. And the more relationships they can have, the deeper the ties they will have and the more of their human needs are met and the more retention they will get. And then the third one I would say is HR leaders or business leaders in general are starting to realize that they're doing an awful lot of big ERP bureaucracy software. And so, for example, when you talk to a CHRO of a Fortune 500 company today, they probably have two major software or technology platform projects going on at that time, be it a new ERP system, HRIS system, an expense management system, whatever it happens to be. And on those projects and those software kind of platforms have all been born out of governance. They've all been born out of bureaucracy. You know, it's all about control.
Right.
You know, it starts from security and admin and it moves to control and command. And so ultimately when they're launched, then it's a big, hard slog. Nobody wants to use them.
Right.
Because they're painful, you know.
Right.
And now I hear HR leaders kind of realize that. They're like, oh yeah, we have to implement X. And then we're going to spend 2 years trying to get people to use it and it's going to be hell on earth. And so there's a recognition of that, that maybe we need to start, but yet they see their employees in the corridor on their phones, on their consumer apps, and they have no problem with adoption.
Right.
And the apps are inspiring the employees to use them. So I think what we're seeing now is a shift towards, can we implement something more human? Like if we're going to implement software, maybe a more human layer, a human applications layer that is not grown out of governance, but grown out of collaboration and relationships and giving that consumer kind of shot of endorphins that they get from their consumer applications. And so things like, you know, a platform for social recognition or continuous performance management, some of those being redeveloped that and trying to lessen the governance parts of them and heighten the sense of wonder aspects of them, the consumer kind of dividend aspects of them, so that they're adopted without you having to dedicate departments of energy right. to getting them adopted. So I see that that's a big shift. Over the next couple of years, we'll see a lot less talk of the governance bureaucracy software and a lot more talk of the human software and how that's basically being adopted, facilitating a more easy swap of energy between employees, deeper relationships, and then therefore more creativity, more energy.
I think you're right. And it is sort of amazing that it's taken this long to get here. I was reading recently a piece by the analyst Josh Burson on learning in the flow of work and this new age. Yeah. And he was pretty critical. If you read between the lines, there's a lot of criticism of HR and training.
Yeah.
You know, he made the point of how often are learners actually involved in the selection of the tools, the content, the libraries that are being chosen. I mean, usually it's, as you said, there's that yeah. panel, there's that department.
Yeah.
There's, you know, multiple heads of departments evaluating a platform, and the end user really isn't part of that process driving it. And then we all have to rally and do change management to try to force everyone to adopt the CRM or the LMS or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And to your point, and yet everyone's addicted to their phones. You know, you can't yeah. not use your phone or pick it up when it buzzes or yeah. engage with others on the social platform. So hopefully we're getting that and we see, yeah. let's engage the end users in it and find out, like, what is it that's making, turning habits? How did Facebook become a habit or Instagram or any of those? And how can we consumerize our enterprise software?
It's a great example, actually. You talk about learning platforms, for example, and Josh Berson's article. So a traditional way of approaching that is they'll pick a platform, the company. It'll be a big feature comparison matrix.
Right.
And the big feature comparison matrix will be, half of that matrix will be about admin, governance, security, all of those, you know, important things, but none of that is going to excite the user. Then they're going to launch it, the big change management process. They're going to command people to learn. They're going to say, I want you to finish X modules by the 15th of December. And they're going to sit on the 16th of December and realize, you know, 20% of the organization has actually done it. And then it's like, oh, holy moly, what are we going to do, you know? And it's just a very uninspiring way of achieving the goal. Whereas, as Josh, you know, mentioned, if you can have in situ learning, you can have teachable moments that are peppered throughout somebody's day where they're being inspired to do it. There's certain hooks that bring them back to do it. They get a positive reinforcement from doing it. And the software is a delight to use. That's the game changer. That means you're sitting on the 16th of December and most of the organization are invigorated with it. They're even talking amongst themselves about it. They're pointing out how cool something is. And they're learning by osmosis in the most powerful way, because it's in these teachable moments that are in situ when they're doing the work.
Right.
So it's night and day. It's just night and day. And what the old style is, and it's still 90% of what everybody does, but what the old style is, it's born out of bureaucracy and it's born out of a command and control mindset. And when you're purchasing the software, I understand how it works. You know, it's very hard to have a matrix of features that inspire or generate excitement. It's very hard to document that. It's kind of more art than science. But that's where we're going. The realization is setting in. And so what we'll see is much less bureaucracy and much more energy and empowerment.
I hope it comes soon. I hope it comes soon. Eric, tell us, where can we find out more about Global Force and the Employee Experience Index?
Obviously, globalforce.com is the place where everybody would start. I mean, Global Force, we have our WorkHuman Cloud platform, which is a suite of applications for running social recognition programs, which is these kind of micro bonuses between employees when they see great work being done. Conversations, which is a continuous performance management product, and others. The other area is WorkHuman.com. WorkHuman is a conference that we set up about coming up to 5 years ago now. And it was basically a conference about a movement, about the movement of bringing humanity to the workplace. You know, how can we make the workplace a more human sensitive environment? And I have to say, we've been unbelievably blown away over the last 4 years. The conference has doubled in size every year. It's kind of a conference. It's more like a religious experience for some HR people. I call it Woodstock for HR. You get thousands of HR people who go and they just cannot believe that they have a couple of days to just think about how to bring humanity to their workplace. And they go away with a lot of great ideas. And as I said, because of word of mouth, that's doubled every year. It's in Nashville in March in 2019. So workhuman.com is another great place to start. That kind of synthesizes an awful lot of these topics that we've been talking about today into some content and obviously the major conference.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure we have those links, of course, in the show notes and everywhere that we're going to be putting this show. Eric, thanks for all the work that you're doing. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?